On the phone with us now, Patrick Wright. He is the with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Good morning, Mr. Wright. How are you this morning?
Doing wonderful, thanks.
Where are you this morning?
I am in Chelsea now, but I'm going to be heading down to Detroit to go to a hearing on graduate students at the University of Michigan and whether or not they can be unionized.
What's the weather like down there right at the moment?
Not too bad, mid-40s.
Yeah, it's going to be warm here today. It's been just a very odd winter, and there are things that are being canceled and things going forward, despite the fact that it's been so warm. All right, let's take this little by little. First, kind of give the overview. What's the deal here? The state wants to see U of M graduate student research assistants and unionize them. They're making it sound like they're state employees and not students.
Right. The law allows public employees to be unionized. State employees are actually covered by the state civil service, and they have a different set of rules. But your local teachers, your sheriff, they're all covered by this law called the Public Employment Relations Act. And under that law, if you are a public employee, you can be put into a mandatory public sector bargaining unit, assuming that the unit votes for unionization. But there's a precondition. You have to be a public employee. In 1981, after the University of Michigan had said, you know what, we're going to let all of these graduate students act like they're public employees and let them unionize. And then a conflict occurred, and the university said, you know what, we made a huge mistake. These people really aren't public employees. So there was a long 19-day trial, and the state labor board called for the Michigan Employment Relations Commission, said this kind of group, the ones that teach the classes, so if you went to a large section at University of Michigan or Michigan State or Wayne State, and then they had a professor lecture at you, then you had some graduate student teaching you, that was a TA. And they were allowed to be unionized because when they were doing that, they were kind of really working for the university and doing something that was helping the university do its core function of educating students. But if you were something called an RA, just a resident assistant who is doing research for your dissertation, despite the fact that the university gave you a stipend, that was not considered sufficient to make you a public employee. And what happened is for 30 years, that just stayed the way of the world. And then this year, the same union that lost that unionization fight in 1981 filed to try and represent the same group of employees at the same university. Except this time, they got the regents at the University of Michigan to not fight it, at which point we got involved, and it went a little bit haywire from there.
Now, explain to me, let's take it from this point quickly. What is this graduate employees organization? What is their status?
It's an offshoot of the AFT, which is the American Federation of Teachers of Michigan, and it is a... it is a union of graduate students who do this TA work at the University of Michigan.
All right. And what is the, aside from the, what appears to me the most obvious thing is that unions are just looking to make people members so they can collect dues. What is their argument or the upside of unionizing grad assistants?
They would claim that they would perhaps get their stipends higher, maybe get them graduate students almost across the board because of the competitiveness of luring them to come to the universities. They don't pay tuition. Well, theoretically, it's paid, but it's paid for them and it's not taxed. And they get a stipend or somewhere around $2,000 a month to live at the university so that they can basically feed themselves while studying. And then they spend their 5 to 7 years getting their expertise, writing their dissertation, and then they go off into the world and do their own thing. What the union would claim, if you had them on the phone, was that they would claim that they will do some way, shape, or form make that entire experience better. Maybe they'll get them a larger stipend, better benefits, or make them have to work less hard in the labs, which is, of course, silly, the last one, because That's how you finish your dissertation. You actually have to do the research, and you have to get to the point where you've learned and accomplished something that's unique enough to allow you to be granted the doctorate degree.
Patrick Wright on the phone with us. He's the Legal Foundation Director for the Mackinac Center, talking about this idea of unionizing grad students. Where are we in the process, and how close are we to this actually becoming fact?
Well, that's a really interesting question, because you speak as if there is a clear process. There isn't.
Right. Silly me, once again. Silly me. I got it. Yep.
It's been a, I've called it a due process nightmare for my clients, because what happened is the university, basically for political reasons, the Democrats on the Board of Regents told the administration, which is almost universally against this concept, that they have to pretend that these students are actually public employees. And so you ended up with a situation where you have the employer, which typically fights unionization efforts, particularly where the employee designation is dubious, and the union on the same side. They're both claiming that the students were public employees, and so this is at the point where we got involved. We came before this labor board and said, you can't do this. You have a 30-year decision, old decision, that you decided yourselves on this exact question. You just can't ignore it. And at first, they said, you know what, you're absolutely right, Mr. Wright, but we're not going to let you make that argument because we don't think your students that you're representing has standing. Well, she'd be affected. She'd pay the dues money, and she would be forced to associate with a group that she doesn't believe in. I don't see how she's not affected. They said, well, you just don't have enough people, so bring some more back. So I brought back over 10% of the bargaining unit, which is the threshold they sent, and they moved the goalpost and said, well, we said 10%, but what we really meant was the only people who get 10% and want a unionization to go forward can intervene in this action, and your group doesn't meet that definition. Now, while this was going on, the Attorney General was becoming aware of the events, too, and it also sought to intervene in the action and say, look, we have the University of Michigan. The research expenditures there are $1.2 billion a year. It's the second most of any university in the country, behind only Johns Hopkins. This is a big deal. And, you know, when you were talking about how much money was involved for the union, it's about a million and change a year.
Yeah, that was leading up to one of my next questions. Just what does this mean dollar-wise? And because at the end of the day, just about everything's about money.
That's a fair statement. It's cynical, but perhaps accurate one. the state labor board, Merck, said, okay, well, your group, Mr. Wright, your group of 300 and whatever students, we're not going to let them participate. We're not going to let the AG participate. But the point you raised is correct, that 30 years ago we held this. And you know what we're going to do? We're going to hold a fact hearing, and we're going to see if any of the facts change. But the only two parties we're going to allow to participate in this hearing are the union, which believes these people are public employees, and the university, which is under orders from its regents to claim that these people are public employees. So yesterday that hearing started, and of course there was no cross-examination of any of the witnesses put on by the union, by the university, because they're in agreement. And so you have this fascinating hearing where you have two people arguing the exact same side and pretending that we're somehow going to find new and important facts.
Right.
So we've appealed that to the Michigan Supreme Court. The AG's appealed that to the Michigan Supreme Court, and we'll see what happens from there.
Now, I'm reading off your website, Mackinac Center for Public Policy website, quoting U of M President Mary Sue Coleman, who says, I do not see research assistants as our employees, but as our students. When I was a graduate student, says the president, I did not see myself as working for the university, and I did not see my faculty mentor as my employer. Far from it. What sort of weight, in your professional opinion, does something like that coming from the school president have in this situation, or does it have any effect at all?
Well, it apparently didn't, because Merck wasn't swayed by it. That letter, she said that before the Board of Regents, and then we had a letter written from 18 of the 19 chairs of the various graduate departments at the University of Michigan to Provost Hanlon. And Provost is basically the guy who day-to-day runs the university. Mary Sue Coleman's above him, but then it's he's the guy who's runs the nuts and bolts of the place. Anyway, he's testifying today in this hearing, and he's expressed that he doesn't believe these people are public employees. All of the deans of the various colleges said the same thing, and yet here we are having a hearing on this very question.
All right, so what is the burden of proof, if you will, for those who want these grad assistants to become union members? What is their burden of proof? Don't they have to show that there's some sort of tremendous benefit that these people becoming part of the union would experience some sort of grand new life for themselves? I mean, does that play into it at all?
That's their burden to get people to vote for them. It was interesting. There was a discussion yesterday between the union and the university to the administrative law judge who's administering this hearing, kind of asking that very question you just asked, which is, what exactly is it we have to show you to win? And I think that kind of explains how unique, and please understand that's a euphemism, for this process has been. It's just bizarre is what the entire process of this has been so far.
What would dues be? Do you know what dues would be? Let's just go forward and say, okay.
$42 somewhere in there for a for graduate students. It's somewhere around 1.6 of their salary. 1.63, I think, was the number.
And dues are paid, what, annually? That's an annual number?
Yeah, it's an annual number. And one-third of that money goes to parent unions. So the AFT would be looking to make, you know, $300,000 extra a year just by being the parent union to the graduate employees organization.
Permission to make a generalization and an observation that I've made over the years, but much like the government itself, unions tend to sort of work like mobs do. They get money from a group of people, then they have to send off a little bit of cash to the bosses up the food chain just to kind of keep everybody happy. And they're taking their piece of the action, in other words. Would that be unfair to say?
Well, I will throw this caveat in, and that is the Supreme Court has blessed the concept of unions. We have set up a set of government that works the same way. And so while you may be correct that there are a few parallels in the way that money goes here and money goes there, one of them has been held to be, two of them, government in general, and unions have held to be legal, and obviously mobs have not.
It just strikes me, a little bit of protection money. Hey, you pay me a little bit, I give my bosses a taste, and everything's good, and I just come around every once in a while, and you give me some of your cash. Now, that might be juvenile, but
fair to say is that the unions have a lot of say over who gets plum jobs like being a regent. Regents are picked out of the conventions, and so it is. I don't think that whole point is lost on particularly the Democrats, on the regents who all voted for this. The two Republicans voted against it. When the unions came and said, hey, we'd like to have these people designated as public employees.
Patrick Wright with the Mackinac Center. It's silly to say that this is interesting to talk about, but at the same time, it's equally frustrating and confusing. But right at the moment, after all my years, I'm still equally entertained, interested, and confused by many things that go on in the world. Is this at all, you see what happened in Indiana recently, apparently that's going to become a right-to-work state. Does this affect any of this? How do you view the whole right-to-work thing going on in Indiana as it may rub off on Michigan?
Well, I think that's a more, that question is really a question about, are we going to get any business growth here? Indiana is now an outlier in the Midwest. Ohio is not right to work. Michigan's not right to work.
Right.
Illinois is not right to work. And so If you are a company and you are saying, hey, maybe I'd like to do something where it's easy to do transportation modes to get to all of the Midwest, where am I going to put my manufacturing jobs? Am I going to go into a state that's where their union presence is strong and powerful, or am I going to go into a state where it's a little bit easier to get things I want and people who support the union only do so because they really truly believe in what the union's doing? I think that on balance, you're probably going to find more of those go to Indiana. And so I am expecting that throughout the region, there's going to be a lot of projects that could have gone to other states in the Midwest, and including Michigan, that are going to end up in Indiana.
Well, U.S. Senator Debbie Stabenow just said recently, our future is advanced manufacturing. So, well, thank you very much, sir. We appreciate your time. We'll keep track of this story and see how it develops, if there's ever a development. It sounds like, when do you expect something formative to happen?
Well, if the Supreme Court's going to act, it's probably going to act in the next couple of days. If it doesn't, I expect this hearing will end sometime in mid to late February. And then Merck will make its decision in early March, and depending on what that decision is, the students may be facing a vote in mid-March to early April.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Patrick Wright, Mackinac Center for Public Policy, Mackinac.org, Vic McCarty Show. We'll be right back.